Hello and welcome to the Learning to Mum podcast, a podcast dedicated to talking all things being a mum and all things being a female. The latter I feel much more qualified to talk about. I'm passionate about the honest accounts, the raw reality, and all the highs and lows that come with motherhood. So welcome to this podcast hosted by me, Kelly Beaumont. I'm so grateful to have you listening to me today. Enjoy. Hi everybody and welcome to the Learning to Mum podcast. This is episode 3 of season 2. I am going to bypass any kind of overview for what's happening for me and Ophelia at the moment because I just want this whole episode to be dedicated to the topic in hand. So I'll be back with you soon to share a little bit as to kind of what's been happening in our lives. But today is continuing with the theme of postnatal depression. A couple of weeks ago, I came onto the podcast and did a bit of a overview in the topic and spoke about some of the data, some of the facts and some of the figures. And today is focused on a more personal experience of postnatal depression. I had a conversation with the wonderful, lovely, amazing Beck Homer, who talks to us about her experience of postnatal depression. In the episode, we cover all different things that Beck experienced, right from pregnancy through to having her young son, Seth, who is now 7. And she looks back at that experience and talks to us very openly, very candidly, and very bravely about a topic that is still not as publicly spoken about as perhaps reality suggests that it should be. We know a lot of people do experience postnatal depression and other forms of kind of mental well-being challenges, either during pregnancy or post-delivery of baby. Beck is really passionate about airing this subject and sharing her personal experience with the view that she could potentially help other people out there who may be going through the same or similar experiences. So just to give you a bit of context of who Beck is and to give a bit of starting point for the episode. So Beck is a radio presenter and she has more recently graduated from university after studying her degree as a mature student. She has recently just obtained a role as an employability trainer, working with young people to help them find work or training or potential kind of ongoing education. So a really, really value-add role to society and something that I absolutely have every confidence that Beck will smash because she is just so passionate about the things that she is focused on. I really loved speaking to her about this topic, and whilst at points the episode is very emotional and painful, I'll be honest, to hear, it's a topic that is so important to discuss and kind of pull back the plaster and, you know, rip it right off and kind of delve into what's happening beneath the surface. Because what Beck speaks about so beautifully is that her experience was a traumatic one, and it's through not speaking about it and processing what happened that can sometimes really kind of amplify the experience of PND or other kind of mental well-being challenges when it comes to becoming a mum or becoming a parent. When we were kind of leading up to do the conversation, Beck spoke to me about the fact that this started very, very early on for her. And in the episode, you'll hear the kind of full story end to end. But what we didn't touch on in the episode is that for Beck, this began right at the beginning when she was given a due date for her son. And when that due date came and went, what kind of started to happen was a bit of a spiral into expectation versus reality. And being given a prescribed due date, Beck found difficult to acknowledge that she was late, in inverted commas. And actually, we even had a conversation before we hit record about how damaging such things can be, particularly if you're of the personality preference where you like to be quite ordered or you like to have control or whatever that looks like. As soon as you kind of get to a due date and that kind of figure is in mind once it comes and it goes. For a lot of people, and I know from speaking to many people, that in itself can be a bit of a trigger for almost feeling like you're a bit of a failure. And whilst that couldn't be any further from the truth, this isn't about external confirmation that things are okay. This is about your personal experiences and what you're processing internally. So I just wanted to put that out there because I know that that was something that Beck felt really passionately about, and I know from speaking to other mums is quite a contentious issue. I think it's important to flag, albeit I'm sure it's quite evident from the title and the description, that this does go into quite a lot of detail about how somebody can really struggle with becoming a mum. And whilst there's so many podcast episodes, maybe, I've touched on it in certain episodes here, but definitely other podcasts out there that touch on the great, wonderful experiences of becoming a mum and the perfect birth story, this is far from that. And it's a complete recognition that every single person's experience is so fundamentally different. And by raising awareness on that, we can start to share the vast range of things that can happen when you go through labour and what happens post delivery of baby. And we can stop idolising a birth that often isn't achievable by many people for many different reasons. We also touched on the topic of birth and the method of delivery. And Beck raised a comment on something that I too feel quite passionately about. And this is just a language piece, and it's absolutely no judgment on anybody who uses this terminology, but it's just an awareness of how triggering certain things can be. We spoke about the fact that Beck experienced a C-section for the delivery of Seth, and the flip of that is often referred to as a natural birth. And actually, if you listen back to my podcast episodes, I never refer to it as a natural birth that I had with Ophelia. I refer to it as a vaginal birth. And the reason for that is because I often questioned how I would feel if delivery of my baby through C-section was potentially perceived as not natural and the connotations that that could attribute. So I've always been mindful of that. And it was just something else that Beck raised that I'm not sure we touch on in the episode, and I felt like it was important to raise before going into it. This is not about, coming down hard with an iron fist of what we should and shouldn't do. This is about recognizing the experience that somebody has gone through and wants to share her story with many other people out there so that if it can potentially support one new mum, we're doing our bit. So I hope that you enjoyed this episode, despite some of the tough listening at times. I certainly enjoyed having the conversation with her, and I'm absolutely thrilled and honoured that Beck was willing to come onto the podcast and share her version of events. So without further ado, I will jump into the conversation with Beck Homer on the topic of postnatal depression. Thank you for listening. So Beck, within the introduction part of this episode, I've kind of spoken about how your whole pregnancy and labour and through to when Seth arrived was a whole kind of life-changing experience for your kind of mental health. And we acknowledge that you were diagnosed with postnatal depression at 20 months. And I think just as a starting point for the episode or for the interview, it'd be really good to kind of for you to kind of share with us at what point, looking back, you think that this kind of started for you.
Yeah, it's difficult. I guess with hindsight, I can see that the mental pressures and strains in a negative way started probably from me being pregnant. I didn't like it very much, and I thought that that was wrong. I'd struggled with my body image all my life, so to be pregnant, I thought I would feel beautiful and glowing and lovely. And I didn't, I really struggled with how I looked. I put on 3.5 stone when I was pregnant, and I really struggled with it. And I thought, oh gosh, if I tell anybody that I'm struggling with this, they're going to think I'm selfish, ungrateful, I'm pregnant, this is amazing, kind of thing. So those thoughts, when I look back, they weren't great, if I, you know, if I'm honest, because I should have maybe shared that with somebody. And then I had a due date of April 22nd, and the days rolled by, and it, you know, it got to a week, and then every day you're having people asking you, no sign then, you know, any sign of them? And your social media, constant messages. So at the end, about I think 8 days in, I turned all my social media off, which I think was a me just almost protecting myself, boundaries. And I think that's really important. And I do tell people now who are having a baby, I always feel like that when I have friends who have babies, that I'm like the very serious one. But I do say to them, you know, you're going to get asked all the time where this baby is. So do feel it is okay if you just set your stall out and say, look, I'm shutting everything down until the baby's arrived, you know, because all you want to concentrate on is having the baby and being healthy and safe. So that's a bit of advice that I've always given. And I guess it got to, we got told we were going to be induced on the 3rd of May after a couple of unsuccessful sweeps. So we went into hospital, and I got induced, and I was starting to experience pains that I've never had a baby before, so I assumed were contractions. And they told Stu, my husband, to go home and, you know, maybe come back. We'd give him a call or he'd come back in a few hours. But I'd say within 10 minutes of them telling us that and me ordering my lunch, I did say to this lady, I am in quite a lot of pain and it's quite frequent. And she was, I always felt like I was in somebody's way. I didn't have that whole lovely experience at hospital of people attending to me, or this idea of one midwife like looking after you that I'd had in my head for some reason. It felt like I was on a very busy ward, and that every time I asked something or said, oh, I think I'm experiencing this, or in a minute, kind of thing. I didn't have that lovely call a midwife vibe that I thought I would get. So again, as somebody who is quite sensitive, I did feel like I was putting people out. And I think throughout the whole experience, I thought, because it was my first baby, I thought that even from ringing the GP to say, I think I'm pregnant, there'd be fanfares and some kind of like confetti, and that they'd be like, wow, oh my God, congratulations, this is amazing. And there just wasn't any of that. It felt quite clinical and very, right, okay, another pregnant person. Which again is probably my personality, but I thought there'd be a bit more, oh, this is amazing for you. And it wasn't. So yes, I got induced, and the lady examined me and she said, oh, actually, you're 7 centimeters dilated. We better get you into a room. So this was, I can't even think what time it was, sometime during the 3rd of May. And things progressed really quickly, and I had gas and air, and I was just kind of plodding on. I was like, I can do this. This is, I can. I remember feeling quite in control and felt supported with the lady that was in the room with me. And then it got to I got to 9 centimeters, and we thought that he was going to make an appearance on the 3rd of May, but there started to be signs of something not quite right. I wasn't getting any further. I was getting tired. The lady said, I can't quite get him out. So they didn't know he was a boy at that point, but trying to get him out. And then all of a sudden, I can't even describe it really, but I just remember lots of people running in, them kind of telling Stu that he needed to put scrubs on. A lady coming up to me and explaining that I was going to have an emergency section to get him out. we couldn't get him out kind of thing. I remember being given a clipboard with like a form to sign while I was trying to breathe through grass and air, and I had to sign my name, which I assume was some kind of this might happen waiver form, which I found very unsettling to do, but
sure.
I just went with it. I'm a bit of a follower, you know. Yes, that's fine, I'll sign that. And then I just remember the lady saying to me that the operating theatre was on a different floor and that I couldn't take gas and air with me. So I would be without pain relief for the duration of it, me getting from where I was to the operating theatre. And I was like 9 centimetres, near, you know, or 10, whatever, nearly ready to have him, but he was stuck. So I was in quite a lot of pain. And I just remember using I'd read somewhere that if you imagine your fist is like the gas and air thing and breathe into that, it will help you. So I breathed into my fist, which looking back now is quite funny. But I just pretended it was the thing that I'd been holding. And being taken into the theatre. I remember Yorkshire Coast Radio was playing. I remember that. And I just remember there being all these people, and all I could think about was that I had no clothes on. I felt very exposed. I felt upset. I didn't realise it was upsetting. I felt very exposed, very vulnerable. And it all started from there, really, where I began to feel like I was failing because I wasn't doing it like I'd heard you do it. You know, I was having that control taken away from me. I just remember them saying that they needed to give me an epidural so that they could perform the surgery. And I remember just shaking on this like gurney thing with the lady holding my hand. And I can't believe how much I was shaking, and she was trying to tell me to keep still to get this epidural in. And I was having contractions, so I found it quite difficult to do. So I remember just all these people introducing themselves. I'm the anaesthetist, I'm the so-and-so, the person who's going to be doing the surgery, and then I just couldn't feel anything. And then it jumps to just him being here. I don't really remember much else. Then telling us we had a boy. Seth, Stu was next to me. We said, oh, have you got a name? And we said, oh, he's going to be called Seth Phillip. And then he was crying and he was fine. He was healthy. And I just remember being pushed into this. So obviously sewed me up and things. And then, so Stu was the first person to hold him, which was there's like a big list of things that didn't go the way I thought. One was I thought I would have him first, but obviously he couldn't. They held him close to me. Another thing is all these people have pictures of when the first had the baby, and my one is awful. I won't even look at it. But I wanted one where we were all together and I've got tubes coming out of my nose and it's just horrendous. And you can't get that time back, can you? You can't go back and do it. So yeah. we got put into a room, and I remember ringing my mum. It was half 2 in the morning. And said, we've got a little boy. You've got a grandson. And she was like, oh, I'm so pleased, and it was lovely. And we rang Stu's mum, and then we got taken into a ward of other mums, other women and other babies at, I'd say, about 4 o'clock in the morning. So it was pitch black, there was babies crying, muffled whispers, and me and Stu and Seth got put into this cubicle and the curtain was pulled round. And I just remember the nurse coming in, or the midwife, and saying, right, Mr. Homer, you're going to have to go now and come back in the morning. And I was like, what? It felt like, I don't know, it was really painful for him to just go and leave me. And I was on my own. I was hooked up to lots of machines. I had a catheter in. I'd not no one explained to me how to use the machines or like beep for anybody. No, everyone was whispering, so they couldn't really understand what was going on. Stu just had to go, so I felt terrible for him because he'd just seen his wife have, surgery and then a baby come out, and then he had to leave us, which it must have been really hard for him. But he's not a talker like me, so I imagine he kept a lot of it in. And I just remember Seth being so quiet and just not making a sound, and me just kind of numb. But then I was sick of myself, and I didn't know how to call anybody, and I didn't know I was in a room of other mums, so I was too scared to shout. So I just remember, like, whispering, like, I laugh now, it's not funny, it was awful, but I was kind of going, hello, hello, like whispering, and I thought, what are you doing? Just shout for somebody. You've just been sick on yourself after having a baby. And I just felt really alone. Like, I didn't feel like there was that, support there. And I don't know whether I was just one that experienced that, and it's to do with the kind of person I am and what I need, or whether other people have experienced that and it wasn't the whole, well, you've had a baby experience. If it just felt very, it felt very like the olden days to me. It felt like what I thought my mum might have gone through, maybe. It didn't feel, I'd heard of people having their own rooms and their partners being with them for, could stay with them. And I think I'd focused too much on that, other people's stories, and not just going with what was happening to me. Yeah, and then, do you want me to carry
Yeah, I mean,
on?
whatever feels good for you. I mean, already there's a few things here that I'm curious to pick up on. So I don't know whether you want to kind of see it through to wherever you want to, and then we can kind of link back on things. I don't want to interrupt the flow because I'm waiting on bated breath. It's
All
been
right,
hanging on
okay.
every word. It's lovely to listen. Well, it's lovely in the
Oh,
sense of, I
as long as
think,
it's okay. Yeah, I'll carry on
yeah.
just because it probably takes to when I get home, I think is when.
Perfect.
But yeah, so Stu came as soon as they were allowed. He was at the door. He didn't sleep, he said. He said he cried when he got in, which is, not something I'd ever heard or seen him do. And I guess for the first chunk of time, they don't need food or need feeding because they've been in your tummy for so long. But Seth didn't need anything from me apart from just, cuddles and me talking. I remember just stroking his face and not really sleeping, and being like in stunned silence, really. I was just numb. Just the environment of being in a ward as well, I didn't find, I don't know, I just didn't, I felt very uncomfortable and very, I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what the right thing was to do. I didn't know if people were watching me. And I just remember the woman coming in, the lady saying, right, we need to try getting him on your boob kind of thing. And I just remember that I was so numb and just shocked. Like I felt like I needed somebody to come and almost debrief me. And I don't know if they do that, but I felt like I needed someone to come in and explain to me what had happened, why it had happened, and did I need anything? And no one did that. I felt like I'd been through a trauma, and now I've done a degree in counselling. I had been through a trauma, and I feel
Yeah,
like
absolutely.
I wasn't, there wasn't the aftercare there. I feel like emergency sections are so common. There's so many people that I have met or have messaged me going, oh, that happened to me, or he was born via emergency section, or I had a section. And I think I always want to ask them, was there somebody there afterwards, or did you feel supported afterwards? And I'm sure a lot of people did. but I didn't. And I feel like I needed almost a counsellor or therapist to come in and just make sure I was all right. There was lots of doctors checking I was all right, but there was nothing for my mental health. And moving on to having to try and breastfeed him, I wasn't mentally ready for that at all. Like, I felt like I needed to almost process what had happened before I could move on. And I think that's the case with any kind of traumatic event, is that you need to process what's happened before you can deal with all the other stuff. And I just remember feeling nothing for him, if I'm completely honest, when he was on me, when they were trying to put him onto my nipple and grabbing my boob. I felt very violated, and I just felt like a shell. I didn't feel anything. And I expressed with a syringe, and he managed to get him some of the colostrum, is it? So he got some of the good stuff at the beginning by a syringe. And then I just remember my mum coming and meeting him, and I just sobbed and went, "Mum, I can't breastfeed him. I'm not bonding with him. Like, I don't feel this." Like, he was getting so distressed trying to get on my boob that I just wanted an easy way out. I wanted the easy way. I'll put my hands up and say I wanted to get on to enjoying my baby. And I felt I couldn't do that going through the stress of trying to feed him. Like, he was hungry. And my mum just said, "You do what you need to do. If you want me to go get you some milk, I'll go get you some milk." My mum was great, but she also told me not to give up, which I found hard because everybody was telling me not to give up. So I felt like I was failing because I was considering this other option. Whereas really, I could have done with someone just saying, "Let's get him fed, let's get him a bottle." And I did express milk for him for a little bit, which was good. But again, to me, the bond wasn't there with him, and I really wanted to enjoy him. And to me, maybe I think now I've been kinder to myself and looked back and thought it wasn't about giving up, it was what I needed to do for me. And I'm just one of those people that the best and easiest way to do it, if that's going to be the best for all of us, then that's the way to do it, kind of thing. So we ended up getting milk, and me saying I wanted to bottle feed. And people who say that bottle feeding is the easy way out is lying, because it isn't. It's a ball ache, it's a faff. You can get your boob out and latch on anywhere, and yes, there's some uncomfortable ness for people, and I can understand it must be very embarrassing for some people, especially in a public environment. I get that. But for me to go to a cafe and have to get a flask out, my milk and everything, the stares and looks I got for having to do all this and bottle feeding, I found just as humiliating, to be honest, because I wasn't naturally feeding my child. I was using milk that I'd bought. So I think there's two sides to it, really. And then also, I didn't get to go home till I was in hospital for a week because I had trapped, it's not very sexy, but I had trapped wind, and they wouldn't let me go until it had all gone. Which, another thing, it is embarrassing, but I was in a room full of six other women who were just seemed to be cracking on. And I was like, I just want to go home and start my family. I felt like I couldn't. I was stuck. So eventually, we got home, and I had stitches. I had to be injected every day by Stu, all whilst kind of making sure Seth was fed. He was an absolute dream baby. Looking back, it was absolutely nothing to do with his routine or crying, or he wasn't, he was such a lovely baby, and we enjoyed that experience very much. But I just felt like I was enjoying him and doing that as a mum and a wife, But deep down, there was all this stuff that I'd not processed. So the fact that you're almost on a treadmill that you can't get off, because you can't just put the baby down for a couple of days and go and sort out what you've gone through. You've got to just keep on going. So I think my personal experience with my mental health was that I wasn't dealing with it, but having to carry on. And I think that's a massive factor with the whole, there should be some kind of support there for mums, not even just mums who have been through a trauma, just any mum who goes through pregnancy. I think, yes, everyone's like, it's such a natural thing for women to do, but it's also very scary, weird. It's impactful on your body and your mind, and you can't just assume somebody's just going to be like okay with it, because it is a lot to deal with. Yeah, and I'd say everything was absolutely fine, really. I was just we got into a routine, but I was keeping all this stuff in underneath, really. And I'd say I reached out to, I think, my mum, and said that I was struggling. And so I went to my GP when Seth was about nearly 2, and said how I was feeling. And it got worse during my period. So there was talk of it being like PMDD, which is like dysphoric, post-menstrual dysphoric disorder, I think is the right word. But I got put on fluoxetine antidepressants, and then also my mum paid for me to have private therapy, which I'm very privileged that I have that. Some people must, I always think of mums that must be going through stuff and don't have access to mental health services or therapy, or there's a 2-year waiting list for it, in which case it's, too far down the road for some. So yeah, I was very lucky that I had that support, really. But yeah, that's about it, I think, taking me up to, and he's now 7, so there's a lot in between. But if we talk about that initial, labour and newborn experience up until when I got thought there was something wrong, I'd say that was it.
And from the point that you got home and you said that, all of this stuff had happened and that was going on under the surface, you weren't immensely overt with that other than conversations with your mum and less down the line, the doctor. So between that point and going to the doctor, before around about the point when Seth was 2, what was happening, Beck? What was the PMD related to? Was it all linked back to the pregnancy and birth experience, or was stuff happening post delivery and when you were back home, generally around being a mum? What was going on for you?
I think it's the, I think the comparison of, with other people didn't help. I, could see, I was maybe viewing other people I'd known who had babies who just seemed to be okay, breastfeeding fine. And I think because I'd not processed what I'd, I think because what I saw what had happened to me is such the wrong way to have a baby. Which I think is the problem, is that it's that was just the way I had my baby. I had such a negative association with bottle feeding, with an emergency section, with this being in hospital for so long, with having stitches. Like all this didn't seem like, I didn't feel like I'd been prepared for it almost. So in my head, I just thought, well, this was wrong. Wrong was the word. So instead of enjoying, oh, he's here. Right, let's forget that. Let's just, I was so fixated on the fact that when people ask me, oh, you've had the baby, and I'd say, yeah, I'd always say I got to 9 centimeters on gas and air. Oh, wow. And then I had an emergency section. Like I felt like I needed to say, do you know what? I did really bloody well. Like I was so proud of myself. But then I have to caveat it with like, oh, but I had an emergency section, so none of that matters because they just cut him out. So in my head, I like devalue everything. I devalue the fact I carried him, I grew him, that I that he's here and he's healthy. It's all like ruined almost. My experience is ruined. And I'd say, if I'm honest, it stopped. That's what stopped me having another child. That whole experience is why we don't have any more children, sadly. Because it, I thought, I don't want to. I want to be the best mum I can for this one child, and I don't want to, you know, implicate that with having going through an experience that might damage it. I'd say other things were that I was, I'm normally quite a chatty person, and I was very within myself, quite quiet. People noticed me, you know, I wasn't in, I wasn't really doing anything with anybody. I didn't want to go to groups because I'd have to bottle feed. There was shame with that, so I wouldn't really, I didn't really go to any groups really until he was a little bit older. I'd say for the first kind of 9 months, that's no, the first 7 months, because I did go back and work for my mum and put him into nursery. So I'd say for the first like 6, 7 months, I didn't really go out anywhere, or do anything really, unless Stu was with me. And I just noticed I wasn't, I'd, there was a change in my personality, I guess. I was short-tempered as well. So, little things, I'd lose my temper over very silly things that didn't really matter. And I just realised that I might be, as well, my husband had a quite a bad accident when Seth was 18 months old. So I was on my own at home, with him for 3 months, which I guess is maybe a bit like what you've experienced in lockdown. I felt very alone, and that I couldn't go out, and that I didn't, nobody could, I didn't have that support with me, of Stu, because he was, you know, he'd had his leg pinned and he was in Hull Hospital. So he, I was caring for him when he came home. I was caring for him as well, and the baby. So I just think, there was, I just felt overwhelmed by everything and thought I needed to get help to manage it all, I guess. To see clear, to see things more clearer and in a better perspective than I was. So yeah, I guess that's what happened there.
Gosh, I mean, there's just an amalgamation of things there, isn't there? Because you're busy processing everything that happened and getting to a point of working that through, and then something else significant happens in your life, a trauma for your husband, which you sandwich that in with everything, and you just think, how the heck did I get through all of that? You know, you want to go back retrospectively and just wrap your arms around the older version of yourself, or the younger version, I suppose, because there's just, I mean, there's just so much there. And I've kind of been making little notes as you've been speaking, and I suppose there's two key things that have stood out for me as points that you have reiterated, albeit in kind of different means. You've spoken quite a lot about expectations, and you made reference to kind of call the midwife. You said about social media, the things that you'd heard about, comparison with other people, feeling like things were done the wrong way. And I just wonder how much, you know, what your expectations were exacerbated the experience that you had.
Yeah, I guess it probably is my personality more than a general feeling amongst pregnant women, but I am quite a an idealist and romantic, and you know, I see things how things, you know, I had in my head that I would get married, I would have a baby and live happily ever after. That is, you know, that is the kind of little girl mentality that I had in my head. And which is weird really, because I'd, you know, been through things that weren't very nice, or you know, that might have thought, you know, life isn't perfect all the time. But no, I was very optimistic. And I just remember we fell pregnant really quickly, so I felt very blessed that I was, you know, fertile and that I could have a baby. So I felt very lucky. And then I just remember watching things like One Born Every Minute, and I'd had friends that had babies, and you know, they'd had their baby early on their due date, and then I think it was what I was exposed to. So what I didn't read any books really, because I got told, don't read too many books because it'll weirdly it'll look, it'll set out a picture of what is going to happen, and it might not happen like that. My mum did say to me, things might not happen how you realize, just be kind of prepared for any eventuality. But I think for me, my midwife, I think nobody explained to me what the other eventualities might be. So there's a lot of this kind of, it might not go how you think it's going to go, but then nobody explains to you about, or nobody explained to me what would happen or what could happen. And I don't know whether they do it because they don't want to scare you. Obviously, I get that. That might be triggering for a lot of people before they've even got into the hospital. But for me, I would have actually personally liked somebody to say, this could happen, this could happen, this could happen, this could happen. Like all these different options. And almost, right, so if baby gets stuck, this will happen. And if you have an emergency section, almost down to the, which this sounds like an absolute, I would be an absolute liability having to do this, all this for me. But I almost feel like I need wrapping in cotton wool a little bit. Or just things explaining. I like to know why something's happening, and the fact that you're having it happen to you, but then there's no, you've not been prepared for that. Like I didn't even know anything about an emergency C-section. And I didn't know that I would, it would be so full on. And I can understand now why some people, when they go on to have more children, they have an elective C-section, because they almost, they know everything that's going to happen. There's no, that the control is there. Like
Yeah, the
there
control
is
comes
no
back.
uncertainty. And I think because I got so far in the labour, and he was like, right, he's going to be here any minute, is what she said to me. But then there's that 5 minutes of her not talking to me and her struggling down there. And, it's like, there's no, in my head, there's no, right, if he gets stuck, I'll probably have an emergency section, which will involve me having an operation. Like this is how I need to work. And it was just panic and trauma. And I can't watch anything that's, I can watch operations and things on telly, but I can't watch one born every minute. And I can't watch anything with sections in or anything like that, because it's even if there's a sign of them being all right with it, I just feel like a terrible human. I really struggle with how I coped with it all, really, because I feel like I should be a bit more, well, it's fine because he's here and he's okay, but it really traumatized me. But the therapy really did help with that, talking through the trauma of it. So if I think therapy and counselling is hugely important. I think medication worked for me, but I do think that I probably think I had depression before I got diagnosed with postnatal depression, if that makes sense. I think I was vulnerable. My mental health was vulnerable at the time of me falling pregnant. So I think that had a massive implication on how I coped.
Yeah, I think that that's that from the research that I've done, I think if you're experiencing depression in any form during pregnancy, it typically will then manifest itself
Absolutely, yeah.
post arrival of baby. So I think it's a really important point to address. And just hearing some of the things that you're saying, just all you want to do is go and rescue somebody. All I want to do is say to you, you're none of the things that the pressure you've put on yourself, none of that is true, but it's about what the reality is for you, isn't it? And
Yeah.
anybody can try and I don't know, kind of make that experience, in hindsight look different, but actually it was your lived experience. And I think no
Yeah.
matter what anybody says, you've put a label on that, or however you've packaged it up. And to try and suggest that you should feel any differently is actually equally as potentially damaging,
Yeah.
because that's where you're at with it, right?
Yeah, but and I agree with that. I think just as women have this natural empathy, well, the majority of women, and this you almost want to just reassure other mums that they're doing a good job. That's all you ever want to do, is you want to just be like, you're good enough and it's fine. And I totally get that whole, wanting to not just rescue, but just reassure and comfort somebody who, especially when you've been through, you are a mum too. I think you just, regardless of your experience, you just want to be like, it's all right, you're fine. But yeah, without, if I kind of, I need to acknowledge what happened, really, because not everybody's experience is all right, and you don't feel good enough. But you, it pass, it passes. I do. There are, I do feel that I've got through it. It's still very traumatic, but it's because it gave you your child, so it's like you can't just forget about it. Yeah, and it totally almost kick-started a real mental health discovery for me, I guess, because I think there was a lot of stuff I'd not addressed, and I started to address it.
And even that in itself kind of gives you a balance of why this experience just made you who you are today. And I think as well that point that you just referenced about you can't forget it. With a lot of trauma, you can question, is this helpful to hold on to? And in a lot of instances, the answer to that can often be no. If somebody's been in an accident or whatever, there's so many different iterations. But as you've just pointed out, ultimately, Steph is here because of that experience. In whatever way you slice it up, ultimately, he's here today, and it's made you the mum that you are. So there are things that have come out of that. So you can't really compartmentalize it, can you? Because it's part of the whole definition of everything that's come as a result of that, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's just about how you look after yourself after it, and how you kind of use the experience to learn stuff about myself, and also to help other people, and just trying to realize that I won't be the only one that's ever been through it. I'm not the only one that's ever been through it, but it's just I'm a very much a I've been through this horrible thing, but I don't want to just sit and mope about it. I want to try and be proactive, get help, get support. And the trauma isn't going to go away, but I can almost grow around it to move forward, rather than it making me stuck. Because I could quite easily have, I do think it held me back from having more children, but it's also pushed me to do other things for myself. So it's double-edged, really.
Love that analogy of kind of growing around it, or you could have been stuck, because it's so true, isn't it? It's a permanent feature, and you can, it's there.
Yeah,
So
it's
growing around it
an
is a great way to look at it.
it's an analogy used in grief quite a lot,
Right.
about how the grief is always there as a little kind of almost like a little pea, and it stays the same shape, but we grow around it, so we can grow bigger and stronger and move forward. But if the grief's always going to be there, so it's a bit like that, I guess, with trauma. Similar kind of thinking.
That's a really good way of looking at it. Potentially, if people listen to it who have gone through that themselves, and trying to recognize that, forgetting it happens might not be successful for them, but to keep it there and know that there are ways to navigate around it whilst it's still there in their timeline, I think that that's a really kind of positive way of looking at it. So with the kind of future thinking aspect in mind then, Beck, I suppose my question would then be, you speak about this experience really openly now. You've put it on your Instagram, I think consecutively, at certain anniversary points, you raise awareness again because you'll gain different followers. And I what I'm keen to understand is, when did you feel safe to be able to do it and talk about it openly, and what was your intention in doing so?
I can't really remember. I think it was There seems to be a lot more conversation about maternal mental health, postnatal mental health. I think starting my journey into counselling probably kickstarted it a little bit. I only say I've been talking about it for the last 3 years, maybe, properly, putting things on Instagram, and it's lovely because I do get the last one I put on was not that long ago. I think it was Maternal Mental Health Week, maybe Mental Health Awareness Week, and a friend messaged me who I went to school with many, many years ago, who I haven't seen since we were maybe teenagers. And she messaged me to say that she'd been through exactly the same experience, like down to even the duration she was in hospital and like the time she was overdue, and just every little detail was the same. And she said that she'd like to read somebody else had been through the same thing was so helpful. And that's if it just helps one person to know that you're not a failure, you are amazing, and it's not all going to be shiny and lovely. It can be hard and awful and traumatic, but also how important it is to take care of yourself. I think my thing was that I went for 2 years without thinking it was acceptable to get help, but then once I did, I changed as a person. I started to want to do more things for me, and I didn't want to be just a mum in quotations. I wanted to be the best mum I could be, but I also wanted to be, I was an individual as well. So that's what made me decide to go back into further education. I'd left school with GCSEs, not very great ones. And then I didn't do anything. I just went and got a job. Whereas I felt like I was probably destined for something else, really. I don't know what that was, but I went to the local university and decided that I'd quite like to help young people that have been through bereavement. So I started, after doing an access course and everything, I started a degree in counselling. And I'd say during that period, I decided to share more about my story about my postnatal depression, and put things on Instagram and social media, and it helped people, you know. Only a few. I'm not saying I've got like loads of people saying clapping me and stuff, but I do get, I'd say every time I do something, I get two or three women and men that message me and say, good for you for sharing and being so honest about your mental health. And that makes it worthwhile. It's scary sharing it, but the actual reward I get from sharing it is more. And it's also helpful to me to write it down and share the words. And I've always shared stuff about Pandas, which is the charity that helps people postnatally, which is great. And I've also started to unfollow people who have maybe been through a different journey to me that I find triggering. So even though it might seem harsh, if there's somebody on Instagram who, you know, has an absolutely perfect body after having four children and that everyone was born vaginally and they breastfed, even though I absolutely think that person is amazing, for me, I need to just unfollow them because seeing that isn't helpful to me, my mental health. So that might seem a bit cutthroat, not very nice, but I need to set boundaries and protect myself. From things that are going to make me not feel very good, just as, you know, we should unfollow accounts that, you know, paint a picture of something that isn't real, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think the boundaries piece is just, I think that for me is just the nail on the head, you know, that sometimes that we're so poor generally at putting boundaries in place because we have this kind of expectation of what we should be doing and when we should be doing it, particularly as mums. You know, the more mums I speak to, the more I realize that our boundaries are so unclear because we're trying to be everything to everyone. And you know, this idea of perfectionism, which, you know, is, again, it's exacerbated through what you've just said there. You know, these individuals that do seem to be the epicenter of perfection, and you think, good God, I'm absolutely a million miles away from that reality.
And they're
And
probably not. They're probably not.
no,
They'll, you know,
sure.
they'll have nappy bins piled high, and they will have one kid screaming while the other one is fine. I get that. You know, it's just that whole social media, you know, that's why I like to be a balance of real online. You know, when I'm not having a good day, I like to say that I'm not having a good day, just if it makes somebody else think, oh, thank God for that. Somebody else isn't, but then share the good moments as well. I'm not all doom and gloom, I promise.
No, you're absolutely not. And I do admire that about you. But we were speaking before we started recording around you being really open about how you're currently feeling, and you go through those highs and lows. And I think that's human beings, right? And some people don't feel comfortable in sharing when they're feeling low, and that's okay too. But I think that what that means is that you need to be really comfortable about how you want to interact with those people. So if somebody's great all the time and you only see that good stuff, the question is, are you comfortable seeing that as a follower, or do you need to detach yourself? And do you know what? It's absolutely okay, whatever decision you make, you're in control of that in terms of protecting your own mental well-being. And we're not always brave enough in saying that. So thank you for just being honest. And I think, but when you said about triggering, and I will round this up in a minute, Beck, because I know that we've
It's
been
okay.
speaking for
No,
quite
it's
some
fine.
time. You spoke about triggering, and I think that's the really important part for me here, because what we're talking about for a lot of people will be triggering. But actually, it's that recognition that so is the ideal, in inverted commas, birth story. That's triggering for me. That's triggering for you. And I think unless we talk about all these different variations of what can happen, we're in danger of segregating those experiences that are more traumatic. But actually, for a lot of people, are fairly common, but we just don't see it, do we?
On the flip side, I'd like to say that I feel also, I don't want to feel like people who have an okay, fine, you know, wonderful experience feel
Yeah,
they can't share that
for
because they're
sure.
worried about upsetting people who haven't, because that must be huge in certain friendship groups, probably my own. You know, if somebody's like, oh, we can't talk about that because it might upset Beck. You know, I think the whole thing you hear is about being open and honest, and there being a general like conversation around language and how it's used around pregnancy, birth, and different experiences. And also understand that somebody might not want to talk about something, and somebody might really want to share something. And it's a bit of a minefield, but I just think a lot of stuff isn't talked about enough. Around, you know, not everybody's story is the same. Just because women have had babies and been pregnant for, you know, forever, it doesn't mean that it's just fine and dandy for everybody. I think that was my problem for me, is that I felt like I was in a machine. Like it was just like a, oh, another one. Okay, go in, have your baby, come out, kind of thing. It didn't feel as like wow to me as I thought it might. And I think that that needs to be talked about more, because the end product's amazing. You know, if you've got a, you know, you've got this baby that is yours forever. It's completely life changing. They're yours forever. But it's that whole, don't forget mum and dad. You know, they've been through the mill. It's tough.
I absolutely recognize that in what you're saying, and I think that's where the boundary piece becomes so important, because you can't expect people to know what you're comfortable with and what you're not unless you put those parameters in place. So in your friendship groups, if you identify that, this was your experience, but hey, guess what? I understand that yours will be different. I might need to separate myself if it becomes too intense for me, but please continue to talk about it, because every birth experience is normal in its own way, or every birth experience is unique in its own way. So I totally get that. So let's just, there's two things that I'd just like to kind of round up on. And I suppose the bit that resonated with me was that bit around the personality piece. So let's assume, Beck, there's people out there like you, because there will be, and guess what? I'm one of them, who their personality kind of preference is to be able to get information on this kind of stuff, but, you know, if they're in the lead up to having a child and they want to be a little bit more kind of aware of all eventualities, what do you think people should be doing or could be doing to, I suppose, better prepare themselves for whatever may happen? Is there anything that you would say?
Gosh, it's difficult because I don't think the facilities, if that's the right word, is there in the NHS. So I don't think it's something that is available. I might be wrong, but I don't think there is such a thing as a kind of prenatal, postnatal counsellor, which would be lovely if there was. I would not be afraid to speak to your GP if you have any questions. Sadly, I don't think the days of having a family GP exist anymore. I mean, I have a different doctor every time I go, which is sad, really, because I think that that must have been huge. You know, if you've got your doctor that you've had since you were a kid, or, you know, somebody you can absolutely confide in and they know what you were doing 6 months ago, I think that's great. Yeah. But I don't necessarily know, think that's the case anymore. Don't be afraid to ask your GP, though. I think a lot of people are a bit worried about wasting time or feeling stupid about asking questions about pregnancy when so many people have experienced it. But I would say that I think that's the problem, is that not people are too afraid to ask, and I think there's no such thing as a stupid question. Also, the charity Pandas is very, very good. They've got lots of education, information, resources on their website, and they're great. And they help dads as well as mums, or partners, depending on what relationship you're in. But I just, there are lots of books out there, but I just think they're very about the logistics rather than the mental impact, maybe. So I think something like Pandas, who provide pre and postnatal mental health support, is probably the best place to go for, like, confidential stuff about mental health that you might be too scared to ask. Or just, you know, if you've got a good group of friends, which I hope you have listening, you know, don't be afraid to ask your mates who have had babies. I think my problem was is that it's something I never asked or talked about. A lot of my friends had already had kids before I had them, or nobody, you know, I didn't really know the people that I met through these, like, pregnancy group things, pregnancy yoga, things like that. I think there's this stigma about, or this group mentality where you don't ask a question in case people think you're stupid. You know, like, what happens if you don't, you know, what happens if the baby gets stuck? Has anybody actually asked that to their friend or their GP, or is it something you just do internally and then think, oh, we'll see, we'll just see what happens, shall I? But then there's this balance of not wanting to find out too much because some people don't want to and they might get a bit scared. But if you're a personality like me who wants to be as educated, as informed as possible, then I guess that's where I felt it was lacking.
I think it's just about not shoehorning people into what society thinks is, you know, deemed need to know versus nice to know. I think it's having the awareness out there so that you can navigate your own kind of path to delivery of your child in whatever method. And I'm similar to you, that I would have rather had a plethora of things that I could have reviewed so that I at least had some insight and feel like I relinquished some control, or gain some control within whatever experience was presented to me. And I think, like you say, Beth, there's a really fine balance, because I find that I turn into that person that when someone says that they're pregnant, I say to them, if at any point you're struggling, know that it's okay. And I think, God, Kelly, are you inadvertently, you know, putting your experience on them? And
projecting.
I think it's such a balance, isn't it? To kind of strike.
Yeah.
It's hard. You
don't want to put the fear of God in people. You also don't want to impact their mental health if they're absolutely fine. But you also, it's getting that balance of being able to reach them to know that you're there well. And that it's okay if you are struggling. It's so hard without them going, oh, but I'm all right, you know. Or, you know, that one person might be going, actually, I am struggling. It's so difficult, but
it is. But this is why we're doing stuff like this, because people can pick and mix what they want to be exposed to. And I think,
Exactly.
you know, we're not saying that this is an absolute prerequisite to having a child. We're saying that this happened to you. This is your reality. A
Yeah.
version of it happened to me, albeit it wasn't as, you know, intense. And from other mums that I've spoken to, the reality of, especially post arrival of baby, was such a catastrophic juxtaposed to what life was like before, that I think speaking about this stuff is just, it's there if people want to access it. And that for me is the important part of this.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, Beck, to wrap it up, is there anything else that you would want to say, whether it's kind of, I don't know, advice or for those people that might be experiencing something that you did, is there anything in particular that you would say to people?
Just if you are having any personality shifts or changes after having your baby, or if you feel alone, any kind of feelings like that that might you feel might be impacting you as a person and you as a parent, then don't be afraid to share those, reach out, even if it's, you know, with a friend. But there are lots of things out there that can help you.
Wow, what a raw, honest, and candid conversation that was with Beck. I am truly inspired by the way that she talks so openly about her lived-through experience, and I'm so grateful that she took the time out of her very busy diary to speak about something that she feels so passionately about publicising, and essentially with the view that she wants to support, even if it's one person who may be feeling the same or similar. What I found so refreshing in a way is that whilst I didn't experience postnatal depression with Ophelia, I still found myself kind of nodding along and identifying with some of the commentary, for example, the disconnect with a newborn baby, or kind of expectations that the media presents, or the things that you hear from other people that have had babies, and feeling like you were way off the mark in terms of what you were experiencing and what you were feeling. And I think with that in mind, that was the reason that it was so important to talk about this topic, to give other people the encouragement that they may need to say, whatever it is that you felt, it's okay and it was true for you. Whether you went through that, or whether you have not yet had a baby, I think what Beck and I were so keen to do was strike the right balance between this information is there if you want to access it. It's absolutely fine if you want to steer clear of hearing about this kind of stuff because it's, I don't know, an emotive topic or a trigger, or perhaps it's just something that until you've experienced it, or maybe you won't experience it, you just don't feel comfortable diving into. And I think both of us are in agreement that that's absolutely okay. This is just there for those people that want to listen to it and want to either relate to it or be aware of it for other people that may experience it. I am so aware of this topic, and it's something that I want to continue the thread of conversation about. The interviews that I will do, or the conversations that I will have moving forward, might not be exactly around the topic of postnatal depression, but what you can absolutely count on from this podcast is a really fair and balanced view of what motherhood is, both before and after baby arrives, because motherhood starts pretty much from the moment that you fall pregnant for some people, and for others, it's as baby arrives, it's very different per person. And so I just want to keep sharing as much as we can to get that full plethora of different experiences. So thank you, Beck. Thank you so much, because we need people like you who are willing to open up and talk about what you went through and the types of things that you did to get yourself back on track. And that key message of linking in for support, whether it's from friends, family, partners, practitioners, seeking help when you need it, and absolutely not shying away from the fact that this is a reality for many women, If you want to know more about the statistics on postnatal depression, then I recorded an episode. I think it was week one or week two of the podcast of series two. So go and have a listen to that if you want to kind of be aware of the facts and the figures that surround the topic. But I hope that you all enjoyed listening to that episode. Perhaps enjoyed is the wrong word, but I hope that you understood the relevance and the necessity of talking about the topic, because maternal mental health is becoming ever more a subject of discussion, and thank goodness that it is, because what I fear most is anybody who suffers in silence. Because if we heard from that episode, that's the thing that can really kind of trigger it and exacerbate it further. Next week, I will be back with a bit of an update on me and Ophelia and things that are going on for us. And further on in the series, I will be speaking to more mums about their experiences. Some may be quite similar and others completely different. Because learning to mum is about going on your own journey. It's about listening to other people where it's right to do so and backing off and shutting off if that's right for you too. This podcast is here for you to access as and when you're ready. And it's also an opportunity for you to kind of pick and mix the topics that work for you and steering clear of the ones that perhaps don't. And that's absolutely fine. But I hope that for anybody who needed this episode, it shows to you that whatever you're experiencing, there is light at the end of the tunnel and you can do this. So look after yourself, everybody. Have a wonderful week and I will speak to you all soon. Bye. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Learning to Mum podcast. I hope you found it somewhat insightful, or it gave you a little bit of insight into the reality of being a mum. You might be able to hear Ophelia in the background saying goodbye too. If you want to hit subscribe, that would be really appreciated, and it'll mean that as new episodes are launched, they'll drop straight into your preferred listening. So, I'll see you all next week. Have a good one. Bye.